was really proud of our guys. The only person I'm upset at right now is myself. Fourth quarter, I didn't, you know, I just said to my staff, I coached like 800 games in this league. We got to do a better job than what I did tonight in the fourth quarter. I'm upset at myself, but I was happy with our guys. I thought they fought really, really hard. You're playing a really good team, the number two team in the East on the road. On a night, you go 3 for 27 from three, and you're right in the game the whole way. I mean, you know, you have a chance to win. You got to be pretty happy with that, and you got to be pretty upset as a coach when you don't help your team more than I do.
We had our chances, you know, from the first quarter on, you know, even I think we had 24-17 at one point. Kyrie got it going. After that, kind of like, you know, our legs kind of got up underneath us from, you know, last night's travel and yesterday's game. But we got to do a better job, which we will. Figure out a way to get better. We're going to watch film tomorrow. Well, we'll probably be off tomorrow, but we'll watch film before Wednesday's game and go from there. I've had better months. I've had worse months in my career. Never get too high, never get too low about it. Stay even keel. Get better and make the next game or the next month, you know, better than the last.
You know, we had a lot of great looks at the first quarter. I feel like, you know, whether it be our energy level or, you know, the ball just wasn't finding the rim. I mean, obviously you give credit to them doing a good job defensively, but, you know, a few layups here and there, that leads out to, you know, some transition runouts that they got, you know, some threes in transition. They didn't hit a ton, but, you know, they capitalized on our mistakes. I mean, we're down, you know, a few guys right now. So for us, we all got to be better.
Inappropriate, whiny, all the above. The Cleveland Cavaliers, they have given him everything he wanted. They have the highest payroll in NBA history. He wanted J.R. Smith last summer. They paid him. He wanted Shumpert last summer. They bought in Kyle Corver. He's the best player in the world. Does he want all the good players? He don't want to compete. They're the defending champs. And for him to be trying to hold anything over Dan Gilbert's head, but this notion that he's got to have all the best players on his team. He's got Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love. He want everybody. He don't want to compete. He want to be the favorite all the time. It just pisses me off that a guy that great don't want to compete.
Ever since I picked up a basketball at age 9, I've competed every single time. You can never question that about me. So, but that's Charles. I mean, he's the guy who has to sit on that panel and says things like that. But at the end of the day, that means absolutely nothing. The road to a championship or the road to success shouldn't be a bed of roses. It's never been my road. I don't think I should even expect anything different. So, you know, having bumps in the road, I think it builds character, and I think it's good for our team. I think it's good for every individual as well.
What else does he have to prove? If he wins, he's got 5 Super Bowl rings, and all the stuff he's had to take and all the name being out there about should he be the MVP or not be the MVP, 4-game suspension, all this other kind of stuff. In my opinion, I think he's fed up with it. I think Tom Brady goes out on top. He goes out and wins his game. He rides out on the white horse. And then when you get to the Hall of Fame, you know, you got Manning going in 1 year, Brady going in the next.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Welcome indeed to the Extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. Hope you're having an outstanding Tuesday afternoon. We got a lot of outstanding conversations to have today. Really good stuff in the montage there. You heard a little bit from Stan Van Gundy on the Pistons' latest. You heard a little bit from LeBron James and Kyrie on the game that gave them a losing record in the month of January, the worst month of LeBron James' career from a record standpoint. 8 wins and 9 losses, I believe, is where they were in the month of January. And that's bad news for the Cleveland Cavaliers, the defending champions. Then you heard a little bit of more bad news from the Cleveland Cavaliers as the defending NBA championship, as the defending NBA champions. What Charles Barkley has been saying about LeBron James, make no mistake about it. Them's some fighting words. There's no question. Barkley has been going after LeBron. Barkley's gone after LeBron for a long time. He goes back after LeBron much in the same way that I do, going all the way back to the decision in 2010, which is shockingly 7 years ago. He goes back all the way then, and he still calls that a punk move for James to leave the Cavaliers to join up with Bosch and Wade down in Miami. He said it was a punk move. He said he's never going to ascend to top 5 status all time in NBA history over the likes of Jordan, Oscar, Russell, Kareem, and Wilt. Said it'll never happen. So he's been after LeBron James for a long time. And LeBron James finally exploded back at Charles Barkley, which has just become the epic conversation in the National Basketball Association at this particular point in time. And why not? There's nothing else more exciting going on in the league right now. Nothing at all. If you think about it, what else is there? There's no rivalries that are going on where it's just a tooth and nail fight for supremacy of this division or that. We're not at the break yet, quite yet, the All-Star break, even though the teams have been announced and some of the goofy competitions they have, some three-on-three thing or whatever it is going to be. You know, they got all that stuff coming up. There's no, like, battle for the scoring title like there used to be. I mean, there's really nothing going on right now that's too terribly exciting, so why not? Charles Barkley, NBA Hall of Famer, all-time 50 greatest players, one of the, and of course one of the most outspoken analysts and critics in national basketball, in the National Basketball Association, but in basketball period on TNT as one of the faces and voices of the NBA. He is going to grab attention. He is going to get headlines, and he is going to ruffle some feathers. That is to say the very least. That is an understatement that he has ruffled some feathers. Charles Barkley has ruffled feathers with people from Charles Oakley to Michael Jordan to Chris Mullin, some of his former teammates on the original Dream Team, to Phil Jackson, to some of the biggest names in the sport, to be honest with you. So why not add LeBron James to that with some really exceptional criticism that LeBron James fired back at after their loss to the lowly, really, really bad Dallas Mavericks? Why not let him fire back? The problem, of course, the conversation that we must have now, of course, is about the material, not about the decision to fire back, but the material. Does he have the content to respond to Charles Barkley's constant jabs? Does he have the content? Because Charles Barkley essentially called LeBron James a whiner, saying he's a whiner who isn't happy until he gets the best players around him. That's why he left Cleveland the first time, because he couldn't get good enough players in his mind to win a championship. So he goes down there where they have already a ready-made championship team with the exception of him, and then he comes in and puts it over the top. Now they surround him with the likes of Kevin Love, an all-star max out player, Kyrie Irving, an all-star max out player, Tristan Thompson, a $82 million player, J.R. Smith, $55, $57 million. They surround him with some of the best players in the league at their positions, lockdown defenders, you know, like Shumpert, and Barkley says he's still whining. LeBron has a right to respond. Question is does he have the response? Does he have the right material to come back? And that's what we're going to talk about for a good part of the show today. Rick Nolan will join me. He covers LeBron James very closely out there in Cleveland. He'll join me at about 3:30, 3:35, somewhere in that neighborhood, to get his reaction. But what's your reaction? At 866-240-1065. Let me read it once again, just for those who have not yet been, you know, if you've been working, if you've been on the line at Jeep, or if you've been, you know, out on calls and you haven't had the radio on, you haven't picked up a newspaper or, you know, social media or something today. Let me just read it to you once again. Charles Barkley, ripping LeBron James, been very, very outspoken about being whiny. In fact, you heard some of that in the montage. Let me see if we can hear that part of this again.
Inappropriate, whiny. All the above. The Cleveland Cavaliers, they have given him everything he wanted. They have the highest payroll in NBA history. He wanted J.R. Smith last summer. They paid him. He wanted Shumpert last summer. They bought in Mekhi Carver. He's the best player in the world. Does he want all the good players? He don't want to compete. They're the defending champs. And for him to be trying to hold anything over Dan Gilbert's head, but this notion that he's got to have all the best players on his team. He's got Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love. He won't everybody. He don't want to compete. He want to be the favorite all the time.
I'm going to tell you, before I read LeBron's response, that I don't have a problem with anything Chuck said, because Charles Barkley pretty much said everything that I have been saying on this radio program. Even, yes, during the remarkable run and the comeback from 3-1 down in the NBA Finals this past June, I have been saying many of these things about his personality, his leadership, his sometimes lack of leadership, the way he kind of hamstrung David Blatt essentially getting him fired, despite the fact that Blatt had them at 30-11, I want to say, at the time of the firing?
Yeah, it was 30-11, which they had an identical record at one point this season, too, at 30-11.
Yeah, and then they didn't do as well again with Tyronn Lue in the second half. They actually were three games worse. Rick Murray told me that last week. So I don't have a problem with what Charles Barkley said. A lot of it is true. And I also don't have a problem with LeBron James firing back. But the question is again, does he have the bullets in the gun to fire back verbally, of course, at Charles Barkley? Here is what he said. Quote, he's a hater. What makes what he says credible? Because he's on TV? I'm going to pause there to editorialize and answer that question of LeBron James. What makes him credible is he is a longtime NBA analyst who has watched more basketball in the last 20 years than probably anybody else other than other, you know, analysts just like him. He knows the game. He knows the players. He knows the teams. He knows the makeup. He knows the inner workings of teams. He knows the ownership groups. He knows the GMs. And, oh, yeah, he's a top 50 player all time. What makes him credible is because he's been around the game for his entire life and has been one of the greatest players in the history of the sport. All right? That's why he's credible, LeBron. But let's continue. LeBron James said to ESPN's Dave McMenamin in this blast, in this tirade, if you will, quote, I'm not going to let him disrespect my legacy like that. I'm not the one who threw somebody out a window. I never spit on a kid. I never had unpaid debt in Las Vegas. I never said I'm not a role model. I never showed up to All-Star Weekend on Sunday because I was in Vegas all weekend partying. All I've done for my entire career is respect the NBA the right way. 14 years, never got in trouble, respected the game. Print that. He told ESPN's Dave McMenamin. Then he wasn't done after print that. Then he added on, go watch the 93 finals when John Paxson hit the shot. Barkley and Jordan were laughing and joking with each other during one of the games while somebody was shooting a free throw. In the finals. But oh, nobody were friends back then. Now that last line was a reference to Barkley talking not just about LeBron, but just about today's NBA, about how all of the players are too buddy-buddy with one another, about how they have all of these relationships off the court with each other, and so how can you really be truly competitive against one another when you're all good friends and conspiring and talking about getting together and playing for the same team next year? He doesn't like that buddy-buddy nature. So LeBron's stance is, well, you were giggling it up with Michael Jordan while somebody was shooting free throws in the finals, so therefore, how competitive were you at that time? While you're talking about us not being competitive enough and being too close to one another, that makes you a hypocrite, is essentially what he is saying. Now, I think what's very important here is to note that LeBron James, if he is going to be criticizing Charles Barkley for yucking it up with Michael Jordan during a free throw in the finals, does he realize that he is also then criticizing Michael Jordan for yucking it up with Charles Barkley during a free throw in the NBA Finals? You can't rip one guy for the laughter in the middle of a competitive series for the championship without ripping the other guy, because it took two to tango in that moment, and I've seen the moment. The video's flying around, reminding people. Is LeBron James really going to go after Michael Jordan in such a way? You better be careful, because anybody who claims that Michael Jordan wasn't the ultimate competitor when it came to the NBA Finals, for anybody to suggest that a guy who played one finals game with 103-degree fever and the flu and needed IVs at halftime, that's one of the ultimate competitors in the history of team sports. I think everybody would agree. And yet he was yucking it up with Charles Barkley. So if he then goes on to say, well, it's not really Jordan. I mean, he really was a competitor. He didn't, you know, goof around and not take his game seriously. If you're going to say that, then you have to acknowledge maybe Barkley took the game just as seriously, but it was just in that moment on the line, ready to box one another out during a free throw, that they had a little moment of laughter. Doesn't mean either one of them weren't going, what's to the wall to win a championship. So I think there's some very, very important distinctions to be made there. Now, to the issue of the substance of LeBron James' criticism of Charles Barkley. Did you take note of the fact that he never once addressed the actual criticisms that Barkley levied against him? Charles Barkley called him a whiner who always feels like he has to have the best players around him in order to go out and get anything done. Called him a whiner for calling out Dan Gilbert and saying he's not spending enough money, when Gilbert spent $150 million last year, counting the luxury tax, and lost $40 million on his NBA championship season. That kind of matters. He called him a whiner and said, don't you even want to compete? You have to have every best player around you in order to be the favorite, so that's how you want to do it? LeBron James didn't address any of that. This is why I asked, did he have enough ammunition here to fire back? If he's going to fire back in this war, you know, this verbal war, what do you got? And here's what he had. He had Wikipedia. Do you realize that LeBron James, in firing back at Charles Barkley's criticism over his whininess, he went to Wikipedia. He Googled up bad stuff about Charles Barkley. Probably what he typed into the search bar. Bad stuff about Charles Barkley. And if you Google that up, you're going to find a whole bunch of bad stuff about Charles Barkley. He did once throw somebody through a window. He did once spit on a kid. And to the truth of the story, just to be clear, it was a heckler. Barkley was a hothead, and Barkley spit at the heckler, which is still reprehensible, disgusting, and never forgivable. But he was spitting at the heckler. The problem is, he missed and hit a little kid. That's pretty nasty. He did run up a debt in Vegas on gambling. And he did do a commercial in which he once said, I'm not a role model. Just because I can dunk a ball doesn't mean I should raise your kids. He did all of those things. And if the goal for LeBron James was to embarrass Charles Barkley by going to Wikipedia and reading bad stuff about him and then saying it to a reporter, mission accomplished, LeBron James for the win. But if the goal was to defend his own honor, if the goal was to defend his own legacy, if the goal was to defend himself against accusations that he has to have the best team in order to win, that he can't lift guys up to win championships on his own, that he has to find a way to match player for player what another team does. If his goal was to respond to Charles Barkley's substantive criticism of him, well, then it was a failure of the spectacular variety. It was an epic fail because he didn't address any of it. Charles Barkley, you know that LeBron James, boy, he whines a lot. How many guys does he need? How much does he need Dan Gilbert to spend? Does dude really want to compete on his own or just be carried to the final, to the championship by a bunch of the best players in the world? Charles Barkley. Oh, yeah? Well, you threw somebody out a window. Or, excuse me, LeBron James. Charles Barkley, you threw somebody out the window. You won't spit on somebody. He didn't deny one word. He didn't dispute one word that Charles Barkley used in criticism. So to me, if you ask, and of course that's if you ask, I think they're both right to a big extent. LeBron James is right. Charles Barkley has been just a bad dude in a lot of bad circumstances, done some bad things. That's bad. But every single bit of it is off the court. Every bit. LeBron James is right. Charles Barkley's been a bad dude off the court. But guess what? Charles Barkley is also right. LeBron James has been a whiner. And he's been a whiner since pretty much when he got into the league. He's been to 6 straight finals. He's a 3-time champion and a 4-time MVP. Nobody can ever take away his accomplishments on the court. But what you can do, if you want to, in true, honest, fair, balanced analysis, you can say that, yeah, he has whined and made sure that if he didn't feel like he could carry somebody the way they were, he was going to go leave, which he did to Miami, to go join somebody else to be able to get to his championship. And now that he's back in Cleveland, he asked for and got everything he wanted, including Kyrie Irving, Kevin Love, J.R. Smith, Tristan Thompson, Iman Shumpert. He told management he wanted all those guys. They paid him well into the luxury tax. And now he's saying, what's the matter with you, Dan Gilbert? Publicly, by the way, you're not done, are you? Come on, man. We need more. Spend. Let's get more. Without once ever suggesting that maybe he would contribute to this by taking a little bit of a pay cut from his Supermax salary. So to me, you don't have to be Team Braun or Team Charles in this fight. If I did have to be in one side or the other, I would probably be Team Charles, only because his criticisms were basketball related. LeBron's criticisms on Barkley were off the court related. And I'm trying to keep this conversation on the court. But to me, you don't have to be Team Barkley or Team Braun. You can very much be, they're both right. Charles Barkley's been a piece of crap for a long time and a lot of off-the-court stuff. But LeBron James is whiny. They're both right. And where does it go from here? Want your thoughts, 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. We're also going to get the thoughts of the great Rick Nolan, who is an NBA beat writer, has been covering the Cavaliers for a long time. We'll get him on the air coming up after the bottom of the hour Sports Center, which comes after I give you a chance at our sweet deal of the week, an $85 gift certificate from Massage Bliss on Adams Street. Massage Bliss offers hour-and-a-half to two-hour custom massages, hot and cold stone massages, reflexology, and prenatal. Just log on to 1065. theticket.com tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. to get one of these $85 sweet deal gift certificates to Massage Bliss for just $25. And that'll be on our website, 1065theticket.com. And if you're thinking about it and you're thinking as a guy, I don't want a massage. That's not my thing. You know whose thing it is? Your girls. Your wife or your girlfriend or maybe both of them. You hook them up because Valentine's Day is, count them, 15 days away. So if you want to hook her up right now, this is the opportunity. $85 gift certificate for just $25 starting tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. at 1065theticket.com or the freebie right now. Caller 10. Take care of Valentine's Day early right now with Massage Bliss at 866-240-1065. Good luck. Nolan right after this.
Now back to Bob France, ESPN 1065 The Ticket.
My oh my. I'll tell you what, thanks to Charles Barkley and LeBron James for getting us something to talk about in the NBA right now, because there's not a whole heck of a lot going on. There's no real great battles, as I said in the open, no real great battles for first place in any divisions. There's not really this, you know, nip and tuck battle for the scoring title. It's too soon to really start talking about MVP. So what can we do going into February? How about an all-time 50 greatest player, Hall of Famer like Charles Barkley going after a guy who is going to be an all-time 50 greatest player, a guy who's going to be maybe on the Mount Rushmore of the NBA, going after one another as hard as they are.
Inappropriate, whiny. All the above. The Cleveland Cavaliers, they have given him everything he wanted. They have the highest payroll in NBA history. He wanted J.R. Smith last summer. They paid him. He wanted Shumpert last summer. They bought in Kyle Korver. He's the best player in the world. Does he want all the good players? He don't want to compete. They're the defending champs. And for him to be trying to hold anything over Dan Gilbert's head, but this notion that he's got to have all the best players on his team. He's got Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love. He want everybody. He don't want to compete. He want to be the favorite all the time. It just pisses me off that a guy that great don't want to compete.
And apparently that was the straw that broke the camel's back after the Cavaliers' ugly loss to an ugly team out there in ugly Dallas last night. I almost called them the Mavaliers. Harkening back to the 2010-2011 NBA Finals when everybody in Cleveland was rooting for the Mavericks to beat the Heat. They called them the Mavaliers. How about that? That's pretty funny. Now, joining us now from the city of Cleveland, our good friends to the east, Rick Noland, joining us to talk about this battle between LeBron and Charles Barkley, and maybe more importantly, LeBron James and the Cavaliers against themselves. Rick, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I am outstanding. You remember the Mavaliers days, don't you?
I certainly do.
I was one of the biggest Dirk Nowitzki fans for about 2 weeks than anybody's ever seen. I wanted to see them win so badly and take down LeBron James and the Heat. That was hysterical. But, you know, I just kind of slipped when I said that. But you know what? Let's launch from there, Rick. That's kind of what Charles Barkley is saying. He has always called the decision that LeBron made in 2010 a punk move, not just the television show, but the actual decision to go, to join Wade and Bosch and try to win a championship there, because it was essentially admitting that he can't do it here. You got to have better players, and if they won't surround me with better players, I'll go find better players to play with. That's part of the criticism that Barkley has been levying against LeBron James for years. So before we get into the LeBron response that we got yesterday, let's talk about the substance of the criticism from Barkley. Bailey. Does he have any points with respect to the whininess and the demands for better players from management, et cetera, especially after Gilbert has bent over backwards to give him everything that he wants?
Well, you know, let's go back to 2010.
All right.
99% of the people in Northeast Ohio would have completely agreed with that statement when he left to go to Miami.
Mm-hmm.
Probably a lot of people in Miami right now would agree now that he's gone back to Cleveland. But while he was theirs and while he was Northeast Ohio's the first time around, and now that he, more importantly, now that he's back here again, in these parts, it's amazing how some people just excuse everything LeBron does or doesn't do, and it's almost like sacrilegious to point out any of his shortcomings. And people are so in love with this guy around here that he can do no wrong. I think there was some validity to Charles' statements. I think he was wrong on several things. One being that the Cavs had the highest payroll of all time, which they didn't, but, you know, LeBron has competed, dating all the way back to his days at St. V when him and a bunch of local kids went and beat an Oak Hill Academy team that had 8 D1 players on it. I've never questioned LeBron James' competitiveness. There's smaller aspects within that you can question, but, I think he competes when he's zoned in and completely motivated is as much as anybody who's ever played this game.
We saw that in the finals. I think we saw that
absolutely,
especially in the 3-1 comeback to win the
and
finals.
And even in the previous,
you know, when he led both teams
in
all five categories, etc., there was no doubt about his willingness to compete at that time. But I think that's a little different, you know, in-game competitiveness than what Barkley is talking about.
Yeah.
I think he's looking west, and you know he knows that the team they just beat in that 3-1 comeback added Kevin Durant, one of the two best players or three best players in the world, and I think he's jealous as all get out, and I think he's saying, you know, he wants some help just like that, and maybe he realizes that without it, and the problem is there is nothing like that that's available in any way, shape, or form.
Correct.
To match up a Kevin Durant addition to that 73-win club from a year ago. But he wants that, and since it's not there, he's whining, get me help somewhere. And that's, of course, where Barkley comes in and says, man, stop crying about what you don't have and go win with what you do have.
I think, you know, if you gave LeBron truth serum and asked him right now if the Cavs could beat the Warriors 4 times in 7 games in the finals, I think he would tell you no. It would take an unbelievable yeoman's performance by the big three, and even then it might not be enough, Bob. This team's shortcomings get revealed more every day, and LeBron has sensed that. Now he could have gone about these things differently, and I think in a more professional and team-oriented way, but he didn't. So, you know, talk shows have had plenty to talk about on 2 separate occasions now in a week.
Yeah, no doubt. And you know, I think you're right about the truth serum. Let me ask you, and I'm going to tell you what I think. You're the guest. Do you think that is fueling this as much as anything else? Because he has heard Charles Barkley's criticisms before and essentially ignored them or said, well, that's just Charles being Charles for ratings and, you know, just kind of taking the high road or dismissed it altogether. This time, of course, he launches into the tirade that I'll repeat for people who did not hear it and get your response to that. But do you think that's why? It's not really the Barkley that has made him so mad. It's the situation. He recognizes that, A, they can't beat that team 4 times out of 7 based as the way things are now. And B, that's not likely to change anytime soon because there is nothing that's going to break that Warriors club up for the next 2, 3, or 4 years. And LeBron perhaps is looking at his last chances to collect rings and chase Michael, the ghost that he once referenced that he's chasing, in terms of total championships. And that maybe that's what made him so surly and angry and bitter and made him lash out. And Barkley just was on the receiving end.
Yeah, I agree. And I think what stood out to me the most in his comments last night, much more than the almost borderline low blows about stuff that happened 20, 25, or even 30 years ago, that really didn't have a lot to do with basketball was his comment about his legacy. And I think he's reached that point of his career where that's what drives him. He's chasing something that, you know, is subjective, and that's going down as the best player of all time. I honestly think that's what drives him more than anything. And he knows that in order to do that, to be considered that, he probably needs at least one and probably two more titles. And even then, it's still going to be subject for debate. Those kind of things always are. But I think that's what's pushing him. And I think he looks at the Warriors and he realizes that, you know, they're pretty darn good. You know, they've got four guys on the All-Star team, and not the great bench they used to have, but still a serviceable one. Certainly better than what the Cavs have been putting out on the floor lately. So I think it all built up to him. We can go into the specific comments more, but
Go ahead. Did you have another thought you wanted to get out before we do that?
Yeah, what I was going to say is Barkley's comments, if I'm not mistaken, were made last Thursday.
Yes, after his first calling, I think it was after the Pelicans game, wasn't it, that he called out his teammates and called out Griffin and Gilbert and said, I hope as an organization we're not satisfied. You and I spoke after that, I believe, too. And
right.
I think that's when Barkley was like, man, what more do you want?
And the Cavs played the Friday after that, and he was asked about the comments after the game that night, and basically answered it how I would expect him to answer it. It certainly didn't make the headlines and the talk shows the way last night's did, but he basically said that's just Charles being Charles. It helps the ratings, blah, blah, blah. Here's what I think is unique, Bob, and this is some behind the scenes stuff. There are basically three guys that that cover the Cavs on a full time basis from the print media, and that's Jason Lloyd from the Akron Beacon Journal, and Joe Varden from Cleveland.com, and Dave McMenamin from ESPN. For whatever reason, I don't know whether it was the cost of the flight or they had some stuff going on or whatever, but for one of the few times all year, Jason Lloyd and Joe Varden did not go to the game last night in Dallas. So as near as I can tell, and I could be wrong on this, but this didn't seem like LeBron speaking in a group setting like he did in New Orleans.
That's my understanding, too. He spoke to the group. He spoke to the group and made some very vanilla comments just about the game and the way that it went, you know,
right.
Very innocuous stuff. Then, according to what I have heard, called Dave aside before he left the locker room to go to the bus for the airport or whatever, called Dave McMenamin aside and said, hey, just want to give you something. And he laid it down to him. That's my understanding.
Right.
It was just a one-on-one kind of a thing.
Yeah, and I don't know, you know, whether LeBron pulled Dave aside or whether Dave saw the opportunity, who's a great reporter and a great guy, saw the opportunity of no one else being there and saying, hey, you know, maybe he'll open up to me without, you know, all the normal people around. I don't know how it unraveled, but I don't know about you, but there was so much stuff in what he said that either LeBron has a way, way better memory than I do, or he either A, looks some stuff up, or B, somebody looks some stuff up for him, because it almost seemed like this was ready, locked, and loaded.
Oh, yeah. It was scripted in his head. The way I said it before you came on, Rick, he went to Wikipedia. He heard Charles go at him again last week and said, you know
right.
what, enough. And he went to Wikipedia or went to Google and just, you know, typed bad stuff about Charles Barkley and took the list down and committed it to memory. Once pushed a guy through a window, once spit on a little kid. We all know he was trying
right.
to hit a heckler, which is nasty and wrong anyway, but he missed and hit a
right.
kid. You know, ran up
a
at that
model.
In Vegas at the
right.
Wynn
not
Hotel.
Right.
I'm sorry, what?
I'm not a role model.
I'm not a role model commercial that he did for Reebok, I think it was.
Yeah.
So he looked up all of the controversial stuff about Charles Barkley and said, I'm going to get him, and I'm going to tell a reporter to write this all down. And bang, there it was. There's no doubt that that was scripted, and he had a goal here. And maybe he was just looking for the right time. And losing to Dallas, at Dallas, a terrible Dallas team, maybe just put him in the mood to say, you know what, now is the right time.
Yeah, but I don't know it made great headlines, and a lot of people, fans, loved it. I mean, everything LeBron does, they love.
Oh, yeah.
And while I can understand it and the anger and the buildup, I don't know what you ultimately gain over doing something like that. You're not going to win a war with a guy who's on TV every night. You've just called more attention to this than, you know, a lot of people just took those comments for, you know, what they were. LeBron responded. That story would have been over and done with. Its cycle had already finished.
Yeah.
And now he's made it, you know, top of the page news again. And I just think
for at least another 4 days, because Barkley's not on again until Thursday night. He's not on tonight or tomorrow, if I understand it. And he's on again Thursday night, at which time he will respond, which carries it into Friday and beyond. So this isn't going away anytime soon.
No. And as the great, you know, the greatest player in the game today, I think I still believe that you just sometimes have to have a little bit thicker skin. Let that roll off your back, move on, and don't give reactions, because reactions are what drive those statements to begin with.
Right.
Just be the bigger man and say, yeah, that's Charles being Charles, whatever, and let it die. That's how I would have
Well, the thing for me, Rick, and give me your thoughts on this. Rick Noland is our guest. He's a longtime Cavaliers beat writer, so he has covered LeBron James very closely and the Cavaliers. To me, what makes this look bad for LeBron is that his response was all personal off-the-court stuff at Barkley. He never addressed Barkley's direct criticism, and that's the problem. Now, if he had come out and said, look, this guy says I don't compete. This guy says I don't want to compete. He says I whine too much about my personnel and my surroundings and so on and so forth. Well, here's A, B, C, D, E, and E to refute that. It shows this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. Instead, he starts his diatribe with what makes this guy credible, that he's on TV, and then goes on to not address any of the things that Barkley said in which he could question his credibility. He says the guy did all of those terrible things that we just listed. None of it had to do with on-court performance, roster construction, getting what he wanted from the ownership, and all of the things that Barkley said. You wanted Shumpert, you wanted Smith, you wanted Tristan. They brought you Korver, too, to get you another shooter. You already have two other all-stars in Love and Irving. If LeBron had addressed those things, I think we've got a much different kind of conversation here. But he dodged all of it and just said, Charles Barkley's a bad guy. Therefore, his criticism of my on-court performance and, the rest of the stuff that goes with the roster construction and so on and so forth isn't valid. And I don't buy that, and I don't know many people who do.
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, when all else fails, don't respond to the message, criticize the messenger.
Attack the messenger, right.
And I agree. I don't think it's going to do him a lot of good in the long run. I think he'll overcome this. He overcomes everything. But in this instance, I would have advised something different if I was in his inner circle.
So from an organizational standpoint, how do they deal with this, if at all? You know, if it's Tyronn Lue or Griffin or anybody else, how do they deal with this? And then second of all, from a basketball standpoint, you know, the problems continue. And I know Kevin Love was out, so certainly, you know, those back spasms, having him out for an indefinite period of time here, you know, it doesn't help. But you shouldn't have needed Kevin Love probably to beat the Mavericks in Dallas last night. You finish your first losing month that LeBron has had maybe in his career. I think I heard it was the worst month of his career as far as wins and losses. So organizationally, how do they deal? And from an on-court standpoint, the problems still persist. What's going to take to fix them?
Yeah, I know we only have about a few minutes left here. I don't know if there's enough time to...
Well, you're right, probably not. Sorry about that, but we'll do the best we can with an abbreviated version.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw already, there's reports that the Cavs are bringing in Kirk Heinrich, Lance Stephenson, and Mario Chalmers tomorrow.
I did see that,
for a workout. There's other reports that they've shown some interest in Josh Smith and J.J. Hickson, who are playing in China, but who can come back to the NBA anytime they get an offer. What I really hope, for the Cavs' sake, doesn't happen in this is they make a panic move. They've been patient to this point, their options are pretty limited, so they can't make a move to make up for making a move's sake. It's got to be a move that's going to pay some dividends, because, you know, if it doesn't pay off, then you're probably looking at not repeating as champions. Nobody around here wants to hear that, but I think if you look at the roster makeup of the two teams we think are going to be in the finals, Cleveland certainly has some catching up to do. Now Heinrich Chalmers and Stevenson all have some pluses, but they all have some minuses. You know, they're all, two of the three are up in age. There's injury factors. It's impossible to really know from a workout. None of the three are playing right now and haven't played for quite some time. So you're not really sure what you're getting until you get it and you look at it for a couple weeks, and it may or may not work out. So I think beyond all that is the Cavs have to really, all of them, look in the mirror and address how they're playing. I posted something today that of much bigger concern than what Charles says or LeBron says back should be LeBron's propensity for committing increasingly more turnovers, taking unwise three-pointers, missing free throws, and continually looking at his teammates and blaming them on the court in front of everyone.
Especially late in games. All of those things you just said are happening more and more in the last half of the fourth quarter. You know, that's when he's supposed to shine. Superstars take over, and he's never been that clutch guy to make the game-winning shot very often. That, you know, if they've got a shot to be made at the end of the game, they're going to Kyrie. At least they better be. But you're right. Just, you know, just the turnovers and the bad passes, the questionable shots, trying to do things that he's not really always been the greatest at late in the game, that's costing them a lot right now. And you're right, that creates friction when he starts blaming other guys publicly.
Yeah, and he's been, it seems to me, increasingly demonstrative on the floor with his teammates. I was watching the game again today, and Channing Frye was streaking down the right side of the court at full blast, and LeBron threw a pass 6 feet behind him and out of bounds, and then looked at Channing Frye like he did something wrong. And that's kind of stop. He should be the guy who's admitting fault first and lifting everybody else up, rather than kind of, you know, trying to deflect blame away from him, which I think he's kind of done a little bit lately.
Yeah, Yeah, you know, you said he needs to develop some thicker skin against a guy like Barkley, and I think you could expand that to, you know, on-court mistakes and on-court, you know, screw-ups, rather than passing that blame on to your teammates and publicly embarrassing them in such a way. Get a little thicker skin and tap your chest and say, yeah, that's me. That's on me. And then go to the press afterwards, and instead of doing the diatribe against Barkley, say, you know what, you know, I've got to tighten this up, that up, and the other thing. My guys, it's not their fault. It's mine. I've said this so many times, I feel like I'm a broken record, and I don't want to be. But speed of the leader, speed of the pack. They will respond if the leader starts taking ownership and doing those sorts of things.
Correct.
Instead of throwing them under the bus, they will follow him through a wall. But if he starts blaming them and pushing them out and singling them out for criticism from the press in order to save his own legacy, reputation, or whatever, you know, they're going to respond accordingly, and it's not going to be pretty.
Right. I don't want this to turn into what sounds like a LeBron bashing session, because he's, like I've told you numerous times, he's been exceptional to deal with 99.9% of the time, and it's been a pleasure to work with him. And he's an unbelievable, fantastic player, among the, you know, top handful of all time.
Sure.
But it's a little troubling that the last two outbursts about the front office and then about Charles came immediately after very bad losses, where he played a hand in both of them. And I, as a basketball fan, and I would rather hear him take some accountability for that. He didn't score in the fourth quarter. He didn't make free throws. He had a bunch more turnovers last night. But that's all overlooked because he decided to go off on Charles Barkley last night. And both of those have come after losses to teams that they should beat, you know, 9 times out of 10.
That's a great point. That's a great point. A lot of that might just be intentionally deflective, deflecting the attention away from the game he just played, the mistakes he just made, the performance he just gave, etc., by drawing attention to all these other things that are bothering him. So people don't focus on him. And in fact, it almost turns himself into, or, you know, takes himself from the villain or the goat, or the goat. Boy, boy, how's that? How that definition has changed, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the goat used to mean you wear the goat horns for a game because you screwed up, right. And now you call somebody the goat. It means greatest of all time. So you got to be careful. But you go from being the goat of that game to the victim because, oh, my God, look what people have said about me. And I think he's been very careful to manage his legacy that and his reputation that way.
I could not argue that at the time. And I think that's almost becoming too important to him. That kind of stuff takes care of itself. That's not something you can control.
Right.
You do what you do, and then you let the results and your performance speak for themselves. And some people are going to think you're the greatest of all time. Some people aren't. Some minds you're never going to change no matter what you do. And that goes from the positive and the negative side. So
Yep. Just
lay it all out there. Do your job. Be professional. Be a good teammate.
Know that the critics are coming. Know that they're going to be there because they always will be. Have some thicker skin and do what you have to do. I completely agree, Rick Nolan. I always look forward to reading you, and I always look forward to speaking with you, Rick. Thanks so much for taking the time today to break it all down with us. We'll have to talk again after Thursday night because that's when there's no doubt that Barkley is going to hold his response until he gets on national TV on TNT before he responds. I can't imagine him doing a one-on-one private sit-down with somebody to respond to LeBron James. We'll get the nation's view of this coming up on Thursday night. We'll talk then. Rick Nolan, thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it.
Anytime.
You got it. All right, it's 4:02 just about now right here. By the way, congratulations to Terry Saturski of Sylvania. Terry won the Sweet Deal contest, don't forget, tomorrow morning at 9 a.m., 1065theticket.com. You can get an $85 gift certificate for just $25 to Massage Bliss on Adams Street. I got fight tickets, by the way, coming up for you next hour right here on ESPN 1065 The Ticket. All of that will be coming up. And by the way, we are also going to talk about Stan Van Gundy's politics. We shouldn't. But he brought it to the sports page again, and it deserves a response. I'm going to have a response coming up in the next hour right here on The Ticket.
I was really proud of our guys. The only person I'm upset at right now is myself. Fourth quarter, I didn't, you know, I just said to my staff, I coached like 800 games in this league. We got to do a better plan. We got to do a better job than what I did tonight in the fourth quarter. I'm upset at myself, but I was happy with our guys. I thought they fought really, really hard. You're playing a really good team, the number two team in the East on the road. On a night, you go 3 for 27 from three, and you're right in the game the whole way. I mean, you know, you have a chance to win. So you got to be pretty happy with that, and you got to be pretty upset as a coach when you don't help your team more than I do.
We had our chances. You know, from the first quarter on, you know, even I think we had 24-17 at one point. Kyrie got it going. After that, kind of like, you know, our legs kind of got up underneath us from, you know, last night's travel and yesterday's game. But we got to do a better job, which we will. Figure out a way to get better. We're going to watch film tomorrow. Well, we'll probably be off tomorrow, but we'll watch film before Wednesday's game and go from there. I've had better months. I've had worse months in my career. Never get too high. Never get too low about it. Stay even keel. Get better and make the next game or the next month, you know, better than the last.
You know, we had a lot of great looks after the first quarter. I feel like, you know, whether it be our energy level or, you know, the ball just wasn't finding the rim. I mean, obviously you give credit to them doing a good job defensively, but, you know, a few layups here and there, they bleed out to, you know, some transition runouts that they got, you know, some threes in transition. They didn't hit a ton, but, you know, they capitalized on our mistakes. I mean, we're down, you know, a few guys right now. So for us, we all got to be better.
Inappropriate, whiny, all the above. The Cleveland Cavaliers, they have given him everything he wanted. They have the highest payroll in NBA history. He wanted J.R. Smith last summer. They paid him. He wanted Shumpert last summer. They bought in Mekhi Carver. He's the best player in the world. Does he want all the good players? He don't want to compete? They're the defending champs. And for him to be trying to hold anything over Dan Gilbert's head, but this notion that he's got to have all the best players on his team. He's got Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love. He wants everybody. He don't want to compete. He want to be the favorite all the time. It just pisses me off that a guy that great don't want to compete.
Ever since I picked up a basketball at age 9, I've competed every single time. never questioned that about me. So, but that's Charles. I mean, he's the guy who would have had to sit on that panel and say things like that. But at the end of the day, that means absolutely nothing. The road to a championship or the road to success shouldn't be a bed of roses. It's never been my road. I don't think why I should even expect anything different. So, having bumps in the road, I think it builds character, and I think it's good for our team. I think it's good for every individual as well.
What else does he have to prove? If he wins, he's got 5 Super Bowl rings, and all the stuff he's had to take and all the name being out there about should he be the MVP or not be the MVP, 4-game suspension, all this other kind of stuff. In my opinion, I think he's fed up with it. I think Tom Brady goes out on top. He goes out and wins his game. He rides out on the white horse. And then when you get to the Hall of Fame, you know, you got Manning going in 1 year, Brady going in the next.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
There is a very, very fat chance of that happening. There's no way Tom Brady is going out on a 5th championship, Manning out 1 year, Brady the next. No, it's not going to happen. Tom Brady said jokingly a couple of years ago he's going to play for 10 more years, which would have taken him to like 47 or 48 years old. And while I don't think that's happening, I don't think he thinks he's playing any less than 5 more, which would mean 3 more on top of where he is now. He's 39 years old. He's in a 7th Super Bowl. There is nothing that he does that relies on speed that starts to go away when you get older. There's nothing that he does that relies on arm strength that starts to fade as you get older. There's nothing he does that relies on escapability that goes away as you get older. Tom Brady plays the game from the pocket. He plays it with quick decisions. He plays it with a perfectly constructed offense in which they can shuffle in multiple pieces and parts that nobody ever heard of before, and they all give the same production. There's nothing that says Tom Brady can't keep doing at 40 what he did at 39, and at 41 what he does at 40, and at 42 and 43 and 44 what he was doing before. There will be an end date. Don't get me wrong. But nothing would surprise me about Michigan grad Tom Brady, you know, the pride of the Wolverines, despite some of the weird hiccups of his career at UM. He is the greatest. He is just the greatest of all time. And I do not like the Patriots, and I'm going to pull for the Falcons. But I'll tell you what, Tom Brady has all of my respect, especially after the way, he was challenged, if you will, and his greatness and his legacy put into question by the idiot in charge of the National Football League, Mr. Roger Goodell. All right, a couple of other things, quick points, before I start talking about Stan Van Gundy and his politics. LeBron James, you just heard a little bit more of the responses there, you know, Charles Barkley's criticisms and LeBron James' responses. Charles Barkley's, one of his loudest criticisms was about, doesn't he want to compete? He said, and to quote him, it pisses me off to see him not want to compete. And that led to a tweet that I just got from blah, 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 from Kawhi, 0604. Or Kawhi, perhaps. Maybe it's Kawhi, 0604. That says, Barkley questioning whether or not LeBron wanted to compete was just silly to me. And on its surface, I would say it's silly to me, too. But as I replied on Twitter, and I'll reply now on the radio, there is in-game competition, which I don't think anybody would ever question LeBron's motivation and willingness to compete, because as I pointed out, especially when the stakes are their highest, you know, in the NBA Finals last year, trying in the rematch against the Golden State Warriors, LeBron James, the level of competition and the level of competitiveness that he showed in leading all 5 statistical categories, the main 5 statistical categories for both teams in that 7-game series, points, rebounds, assists, steals, and blocks. Yeah, he kind of competes in-game. There is in-game competition, but then there is accept the challenge competition. There's in-game competing, and then there's accept the challenge competing. Does that make sense? And I think that's what Charles Barkley was referring to when he talked about how it ticked him off that LeBron James doesn't want to compete. He's like, look, you already have Kyrie and Love, 2 of the best players at their positions in the game. An all-star power forward, an all-star point guard, you yourself, the greatest player in the game at small forward. You got a really good complimentary 2 guard in J.R. Smith, who's hurt right now, but who was there for you last year and will be back. You got a great fill-in for him. Presumably, he should be anyway in Kyle Korver. You got a defensive lockdown guy in Shumpert, and you've got a front court guy who will do any and every nasty thing that needs to be done to defend big men, to get offensive rebounds, and just crucial, heartbreaking chase downs of loose balls that give you a new 24 and makes the other team just sucks the life right out of them. In Tristan, you begged Dan Gilbert. Well, you didn't beg. You don't beg. You pretty much demanded that Dan Gilbert pay all of these guys for you. You need them all. He did. And you're in a losing stretch right now. And as Charles Barkley says, man, what more do you want? Do you want Kevin Durant for yourself? Is that what this is all about? You have to have every great player? Is that what it's going to take? Do you need another top five player in the league to join you before you'll say, okay, now I'm satisfied. I got the crew I want to go compete with? You're not ready to compete with what you have? That's what Charles Barkley was talking about here. And I think there's a little bit of merit to
his team.
About.
He's got Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love. He won't everybody. He don't want to compete. He want to be the favorite all the time. It just pisses me off that a guy that great don't want to compete.
That's the kind of compete that I think Barkley is talking about. Not the, in-game competition. I think the tweeter is right. That is silly. But there is context to it, in my view. There is context to it. And the context is, this is a guy who doesn't want to accept the challenge. Okay, Steph, you got Steph and Clay and Kev to join you. Well, I got Kyrie, JR, and my own Kev to join me. And let's do this thing. Let's see where it goes. Let's battle. That's what he means when he says compete. Instead, LeBron is saying, my guys aren't good enough. I hope this organization isn't satisfied. My guys aren't good enough the way they are. This roster isn't good enough to win. We got to go get somebody else. We got an empty roster spot there. Go fill it up. I don't want to hear Dan Gilbert said he'd spend whatever it took. Come on, spend. To me, there is a line that has to be drawn. That line is almost drawn last year when we learned just a couple of days ago that Dan Gilbert lost $40 million on his basketball team last year. His championship cost him $40 million in the red last year. Spent $150 million on salaries and luxury taxes and lost $40 million. Others, including Forbes magazine, say that is a very, very, very low figure. It is understated. He lost a lot more than $40 million. And LeBron is saying, spend more, go get more. And Barkley is saying, come on, man, really? Why don't you go compete with what you have? Show how great you are. You're better than Durant, right? Kyrie can be better than Curry, right? Yeah, you got Clay over there, I know, but you got a pretty good sharpshooter in yourself and good defender in J.R. Smith. And what do they have at the four? You're telling me that Kevin Love can't exploit them? Man, quit crying and go play, is what Barkley is saying. And from that standpoint of not willing to compete, I understand. I agree. I am not going to be Team LeBron or Team Charles in this feud. If I was, I would lean toward Team Charles because his points were basketball related. LeBron's comebacks to Charles Barkley were not basketball, they were personally related. About incidents off the court from 20, 25 years ago that embarrassed the daylights out of him today. And that's fine. He's got to live with them and own them. He did them, talking about Barkley. But to me, LeBron's criticisms were not based on basketball, and his defense of himself was not based on basketball when he said, I am not going to let this guy ruined my legacy or defined my legacy. He's talking his basketball legacy. And then he didn't talk basketball after that. He talked about personal insults at Charles Barkley. To me, it was the wrong kind of response. And it was clearly the wrong kind of response to Stephen A. Smith as well. Stephen A. Smith responding like everybody is. Everybody's got a view of this whole thing about LeBron James and Charles Barkley. All of the ESPN analysts and personalities and so on and so forth have something to say about it. Stephen A. Smith's view was very much in line with mine on his First Take program this morning. And he agrees that while Charles Barkley, is a bit of a loudmouth and can be, a guy who ruffles feathers and does things the wrong way, to respond to him, not with basketball, but with personal attacks, is the wrong way to go. It doesn't help LeBron James' case. And that is something that I think Rick Nolan was pointing out as well. This doesn't help your case to go out there and respond to basketball criticism, competitive criticism, with personal attacks that have nothing to do with the game. Here's what Stephen A. said.
You do have to understand if you're Charles Barkley. When you call somebody whiny, when in the past you basically called them a punk, when you question their competitive fervor and what have you, all bets are off in that regard as well, because those people are going to interpret it as you taking personal shots at them, which is why LeBron James brought up the word legacy. And then when you think about what he closed with, Max Kellerman, when he says he's the owner, I'm the player, screw Charles Barkley, he was talking about, you know, quotes about Tristan Thompson, J.R. Smith, and others in terms of what Barkley was alluding to. Cleveland has given him everything that he's wanted, et cetera, et cetera, and how LeBron wanted this or LeBron wanted that. When, in fact, Rich Paul, who represents a J.R. Smith, who represents a Tristan Thompson, who's had to fight for those contracts to get those dudes their money, they're looking at it from the standpoint that if LeBron got everything he wanted, he would not have had to complain the way that he's complained periodically over the last 2.5 years that he's basically been back in Cleveland. He's had to complain because he hasn't gotten the things that he wanted. So to imply that he just gets everything that he wants, that he's the one running the show, you know, they took offense to it. So
they can take offense to it all they want. They're wrong. Even Stephen A. just said it. Ultimately, his complaining, publicly and otherwise, did get J.R. Smith signed to a new deal. Did get Tristan Thompson signed an $82 million deal. Did get Shumpert brought over in that deal. I mean, pretty much everything that he wanted he got, except for what? Matthew Dellavedova. And at some point, you can't pay and Timofey Mozgov a combined $100 million for those two guys to be backups or third stringers. What more does he want? And here's the part of this that I'm going to interrupt Stephen A. to bring you. My own commentary that I've said before and I want to repeat again. It's very important here. If LeBron is so committed to winning another championship and chasing the ghost of Michael and all the rest that he talks about, and he knows it's going to take better players around him, then why is he constantly pushing for, I'm just going to take a one-year deal with an opt-out so I can opt out and then opt back in with the new max contract when the CBA expands the salary cap again? Why? How many times have we seen the aforementioned Tom Brady, who was also in that top of the hour montage? How many times have we seen Tom Brady go to Robert Kraft and say, let's rework my deal. I'll take a little bit less. I've already got more than I and every descendant in the history or the future history of my family can ever spend. I can take a few million dollars less. Go get me another tackle. Let's go get another receiver. Let's go get this, that, or the other. What do we need to do, Bob? You and your team at the front office, go do what you got to do. If you need some flexibility, I'm here. That's why the Patriots are in their seventh Super Bowl. It's not just how Tom Brady throws the ball. It's how Tom Brady plays the game. And I don't mean the game on the field. It's how he plays the game of building a franchise, managing and working with the executives in the front office to continue to add to the pieces to the puzzle that they need to win another. When is LeBron James going to say, you know what? I got a 10-figure Nike contract. It's essentially, and I remember when he got it last year, a lifetime deal. He'll forever be representing Nike. Kind of like Michael Jordan. You know, Jordan makes hundreds of millions of dollars a year with the Jumpman Nike brand. For crying out loud, Michael Jordan makes money from the Michigan football team. You've seen the Michigan gear. You know this year was the first year they rolled out the Jumpman Michigan foot. It's a basketball player, a basketball logo on a football jersey. It's on their jerseys, on their shoes, on their gloves, on their helmets, everywhere. So Jordan is a lifetime. LeBron has that too. He is always going to make hundreds of millions of dollars long after he stops playing basketball. Lifetime contract. Not to mention the hundreds of millions he's already made in 14 years in the NBA. Do you really have to get the next max contract? How about you take less over the duration of the next max contract and then say to Dan Gilbert, you know what, Dan? You went $40 million in the red for us last year to bring this thing home. I'll take a little bit less this time around. I ain't going in the red, mind you. I'm not gonna pay you and literally cost myself money for this next season the way you did. But I'm willing to take less of your money if it means you can go give it to somebody else and handle the luxury tax that goes along with it. If it's somebody that we really need. When's he offered that? He hasn't offered that. So to me, he is a whiner. He is a bit of a complainer, and he is a bit of a guy who doesn't want to accept the challenge. When Charles Barkley says, you know, I don't like when the guy doesn't compete, that's what he means by compete. Accept the challenge. Not night after night on the court. But accepting the challenge, my guy's against yours, let's go get it. That kind of competition. More from Stephen A.
Again, it's one of those situations. I think that LeBron James got a bit too personal. I think it was a bit excessive. I think he was wrong for doing that. But at the same time, if a cat's going to come at you and question your character in that fashion, you do have a right to stand up and defend yourself by any means necessary.
But he did not defend himself. That's the point I made at the top of the show. He did not defend himself. He simply attacked Charles Barkley's off-the-court incidents from 25 years ago. There's a big difference between defending yourself and attacking the other guy in a way that really has nothing to do with what he said about you.
I don't really think that there's a wrong party here, but I do think that it's going a bit too far, particularly with some of the personal stuff that LeBron James brought up, because there were certainly things on the basketball court that LeBron James could easily attack about Barkley, because Barkley doesn't have the basketball resume that LeBron has. LeBron did not have to go to that point. Now all bets are off, because we don't know what the hell Barkley is going to say, and Barkley obviously could say a lot, particularly if he gets personal. LeBron may not know what Barkley knows about him. Very dangerous game.
No question about it. No question about it. It is a very dangerous game, and LeBron did handle it incorrectly because he took it away from basketball and into personal things and did not defend himself against Barkley's comments. 866-240-1065. Let me get a couple of calls on this, and then we'll take our time out, and then I'll get into the Stan Van Gundy political stuff. I'm quite frankly just getting sick and tired of Stan Van Gundy's big mouth when it comes to politics. Talk to us about why your Pistons are underachieving. Stan Van Gundy, talk to us about why you are one of the worst teams in the Eastern Conference when you were supposed to be taking a step up from last year's playoff berth. Talk to us about why you're not getting what you needed from Reggie Jackson this year. Talk to us about all of the problems on your roster. Don't be talking to us about political things that you don't understand. Stan, I'll get to him in a minute. Terry in Sylvania, you are now on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, you got some thoughts on this LeBron Barkley feud. Go right ahead, Terry.
First of all, LeBron went overboard. Barkley is what he is. He will not deny whatever LeBron says. He's a player.
Yeah.
Him and Jordan went to Vegas and partied their brains, gambled their brains, and Barkley might have let a few chips back in Vegas. He has never denied he's like that. On the court, you got to say he's a warrior. LeBron is a more gifted player. Barkley is a warrior, and they're two like Billy Goat's button heads. You know, so I'll just leave that at that.
Well, you're right about the Billy Goat thing, but hold on a second. If they were butting heads about the same thing, I think we'd have a different conversation, but that's what's weird. It's like one of the Billy Goats is ramming at you about your competitiveness and your willingness to take on the other great teams out there with what you have, as opposed to crying and whining and saying, I need more help. That's one guy's headbutt, if you will, to use your Billy Goat analogy, but the other guy is dodging that one and saying, no, I'm going to hit you from the side. I'm not going to take you head on. I'm going to make fun of you for stuff you did off the court 25 years ago. So they're not butting heads about the same thing, and that's the weird part about this. I want LeBron, if he's going to respond at all, respond to the substance of the allegations that you are not competitive enough to go out there and try to beat the Warriors with what you've got, that you've got to sit here and say, come on, management, give me more. I don't have enough to take those guys down. I want him to respond to that, and then I would have a totally different kind of respect for LeBron if he did so.
You know, Barkley was probably a one-man team with maybe a half a superstar with him. You know, at Phoenix and Philadelphia.
Yeah.
He was a grinder. You know, LeBron has got more talent around him. Irvin's almost a superstar, and Love is a very good player. Help from it. So we'll just leave it at that.
I personally would go a little further, though. I would say Irving. Hold on, real quick, Terry. I would say Kyrie is a superstar. And Kevin Love is not just a very good player. He's an all-star. I don't think he's a superstar. I reserve that word for Durant and LeBron and Steph and Kyrie, and Westbrook and Harden and some guys like that, Anthony Davis. Now, those are superstars. But Kevin Love is what he is about to be next month. He is an all-star. So you're talking about two superstars in Kyrie and LeBron and an all-star surrounded by some very good, solid, complementary pieces and role players, and that ought to be enough to get you another chance at the World Championship without telling your management they got to go in another $20 million in the hole to find another player. So I just wanted to give you my thoughts on that. But go ahead. What else did you want to say?
Okay. First, next thing I want to talk about, Levitard is about blowing my mind out. You know, I listen to him just to be curious what certain people say. You know, about Dan Gilbert, who's put money in Detroit, Michigan with his corporate at Quicken Loans, you know, helping the city of Detroit, which needs all the help it can get. The next thing I want to say is he's talking about the value of the Cavaliers with LeBron James. Gilbert, the CBA, the prices are skyrocketing, and I think they're going to go even a lot higher, and the profit margin is going to be a lot smaller. Gilbert's taking the chances, and, you know, who knows what the next CBA is, and it's going to get out of control salary-wise. Look at the bench players making megas because of 16, 15
yeah.
players.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, so that investment may not be as good as Levitard humanly thinks. Levitard, to me, can I make one comment about him?
Yeah, go ahead, as long as you don't use any profanity.
No. I won't use it today. We were talking about Fidel Castro, whose Levitard's father was attacked in Cuba.
Yeah.
Levitard, when President Obama went there, was supposed to talk about human rights. He was doing away with Raul Castro. The Castro family has 700 million or estimated in Switzerland, and the country is starving. And he doesn't make a comment about why he didn't bring up human rights. And his father was, you know, attacked by the Castro government. You know, that shows me who Levitard is. He's a political hack, no more, no less.
Have a good day. I'm going to say, and I've said it before, not just because you're on the air with me. Terry, I got to run now, though. Thanks for the call. I'll say this in response. I'm not a fan of Dan's, and that's okay. You know, look, we're public personalities. He's on the national level. I'm on a local level. There are people who are going to like him, and there are people who are going to not like him. It's what we do. I know there are people who listen to me every day who don't like me, and they like what I have to say. So I'm okay, and I'm comfortable enough in my own skin to say I don't like Dan's personal style on the radio. I'm not a fan of his show. I know he would say, well, people who don't like the show just don't get the show. No, I get it perfectly. I know what you're trying to do, and I know what your style is. I don't find it entertaining. It's not my thing. When he gets into the political realm, he and I are on very, very opposite sides of the political spectrum. I have not brought him up, but since you just did, I would agree with you. It is very, very hacky, if you will, because it is not well researched, and it is not consistent. And it's the same thing that I will say about Stan Van Gundy when I get into his story right after the Sports Center that we're going to have here in a minute or two. Because to me, if you're going to go ahead and mix sports and politics, which I try my very level best to stop from doing, because I do political radio and I do sports radio, and I try not to bring the two together ever. Like I said before, if you tune into the NBA Finals and find a presidential debate going on, you're going to be PO'd, right? If you tune into the NBA Final, or I'm sorry, if you tune into the political debate and there's a baseball game on, you're going to be PO'd. Same thing, if you turn on a sports show and they're talking politics, you're going to be like, what the hell is this? So if you're going to bring those together, and I do it very, very sparingly, you better be well-researched, you better know what you're talking about, and you better be able to be consistent and not all over the board. And that's what I'm going to expose about Van Gundy, and I will talk about that after we talk with Zach in Toledo about LeBron James. Zach, you're on the air. Go ahead, sir. What's on your mind?
Hey, Bob. I called last week talking about LeBron. I guess he hasn't learned, has he?
Yeah, I do remember your call, and no, he hasn't. In fact, he's doubling down on it, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. You Barkley's not wrong at all. And for LeBron to go at Barkley personally, I mean, that's unbelievable. You know, you really do want every player in the NBA, it seems like. You know, you should have made a run for Durant at this point. This is what it sounded like.
The ironic part about it, Zach, and you and I talked about this a little bit, and I talked about it someone, I think it was yesterday, too, or maybe it was on Friday's show, but you know, I mean, the Durant to the Warriors thing is like a perfect storm for the Warriors because he plays the three. And he's one of the best two or three players in the game, and they had an expendable spot at the three because it was Harrison Barnes. And it just worked to bring him. You know, for the Cavs, even if LeBron James would have said, hey, man, we can get KD, he wants out of Oklahoma City, where is he going to play? It would not have fit if he'd wanted to do that here because he's a three. And he has long said, LeBron has said, that he's not going to go play a power forward position. No way, no how. So it's not like Kevin Durant went someplace, or let me rephrase, like Golden State went and recruited the one of the two best players in the world to beat the Cavs, and the Cavs said, you can have him, we don't want him. It's not like they just outworked the Cavaliers in improving their roster to be what they are right now, or outspent them or outwanted them, you know, which is how LeBron is making it sound about the front office. It was just a perfect storm. Durant plays this position that the Warriors needed filled most, and they pulled him in, and now they've got just, you know, an epic collection of talent. LeBron James needs to understand there was nothing the Cavaliers could have done to prevent that, and there was certainly not an equal and opposite reaction that they could have done to say, okay, you sign Durant, we'll sign player X, which is just as good to improve our team. That's the problem here as I see it, my friend, is that LeBron is trying to essentially say the Cavs should have done something like what the Warriors did when no such move possibly exists.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, it's just a crazy. They've already spent as much money as they can, and as you said, they are, you know, somebody said they were $40 million in their championship year.
Yeah.
So they're already doing what they can.
Forbes 500, they say that $40 million was light. It was much right. more than they lost last year during that championship season.
I mean, that's a player's contract. You know, that it's just unbelievable. You know, play with what you got. Maybe go get you a defensive, you know, someone, a player that used to play good defense and bring him in to coach, because I have still seen no defense from this team.
Well, you're right about that. And you know what? That's one of those very strange things. You know, last year, if you recall, David Blatt was more of a defensive specialist type of coach. That was his reputation coming in, and that's what he was. And it was on the defensive end during Blatt's first half of the season that the Cavaliers struggled a bit. And the reason why, and I watched videos and I even posted them on the Ticket's Facebook page, of LeBron intentionally slacking on defense and just letting guys go and not hustling down and so on, in which I said, why is this guy sandbagging? And I think it's to get David Blatt fired. Because then when Tyronn Lue came on board, they were a better defensive team, and Tyronn Lue is not a defensive mastermind. He is a guy who likes to draw up offense, but it was just a matter of, hey, we like Ty, so let's play hard. Defense is not about strategy, as you know. It's about hustle. It's about intensity. It's about desire to stop the other guys. And when they want to play defense, they'll play defense. When they don't want to play defense, as in the Blatt story, they won't. And to me, that speaks to leadership. And the leader of the team, of course, is the four-time MVP LeBron James. Anything else, Zach?
No, that's it, Bob. Thank you so much.
Great call, brother.
Time,
I appreciate it. I wish I had more time for you, but I got to get out and get that Sports Center coming at you, and then I'll have a few comments on Stan Van Gundy's political talk right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Be part of the extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
Onward indeed, final segment of the afternoon, right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Well, I should rephrase that. Not final segment of the afternoon, final segment of the afternoon for the extravaganza. Many more segments coming this afternoon / evening. Where is that coming from? As our good friend Mr. Miller brings you drive time coming up here when we are done at 5 o'clock. All right. Stan Van Gundy, as you know, is more than just the coach of the underachieving Detroit Pistons this season. And indeed, I don't think anybody could disagree they have indeed underachieved. I just used indeed twice. Sorry about the redundancy. At any rate, he is also apparently a very outspoken political activist, or a politically minded coach with some very activist type views. Yesterday, much as he did after the presidential election on November 8th, he went off on the United States of America, American voters who supported Donald Trump himself, essentially called all people who supported Donald Trump, but that would be me included, called him a racist, misogynistic, Islamophobic, xenophobic, and all of that sort of nonsense. Well, I thought and hoped it would be over. I kind of let it go at the time. I mentioned it briefly, talked about how wrong he was, and then just let it be, hoping that he would talk about basketball for the rest of the season. Instead, Stan Van Gundy decided to make a point of once again doubling down on his political ignorance of issues affecting this country at large. I want to play a little bit of what Stan Van Gundy said yesterday, and I will pause it intermittently to correct his ignorant mistakes.
Well, your working attorney general got fired?
What's that?
The attorney general got fired?
Who got fired? Sessions?
No.
The acting attorney general. He's going to firm. Because she basically said, we're not going to obey your executive order. We're not going to force it.
Yeah, so I look on that.
So if you didn't hear that first part, And again, my apologies to if you turn on a sports show expecting to hear sports talk. That's what I always try to deliver to you. It's very rarely that I will deviate from that, right? But since the head coach of the Pistons deviated from it, here we are. He was asked by some reporter, and I don't know who, about the acting attorney general, a woman by the name of Yates, yesterday, Sally Yates, who got fired after refusing to do her job. She's the acting attorney general while the Democrats in the United States Senate dragged their feet on confirming the real attorney general, Jeff Sessions. So she was an acting AG left over from the old administration, one that decidedly has a different view of things than the current administration. So she refused to do her job, and so she was fired for doing so, for that act. She knew full well that she wasn't going to be able to continue in her current role because the new AG was coming in. So she decided to go out in a blaze of glory by defying the immigration and refugee pause that has been put in place by the new president of the United States, Donald Trump. So she was fired for that last night, which was exactly what she expected to have happen and exactly what she wanted to happen. And that's what Stan Van Gundy was asked about here by those reporters. And his reply...
So, look, on that, obviously, the president, and if you're not following what you're supposed to do, you probably should get fired. At the same time, I think that, I remember one of the things my father always told me about working any job. You either are all in and loyal and work for the person or get out, quit. Don't be in there. Working against a person. So
far, so good. That's a reasonable response to the question, because that is exactly what should have happened. She should have been fired because she refused to do the job the attorney general was assigned to do. So far, so good from Stan Van Gundy. But,
look, I'm on her side in terms of, what she did, but it's understandable. That one's understandable from his part. The policy's not understandable. I still can't figure it out. When you have zero deaths from those seven countries and you decide that's how you make America safer, I can't figure that out. But there's a lot of stuff in the first 2 weeks of this administration I can't figure out.
So I'm going to help clarify things for Stan Van, just in case he happens to have Toledo Radio on up there in Detroit right now. Let me explain something to you, Stan, that clearly you don't understand. And I study this stuff for a living as much as I study a box score and standings and statistics and everything else in sports. It's not about how many people who have been killed from people in those countries. It is about the terror groups that have taken over those countries, terror groups that are in operation in those countries and were identified by not the current president of the United States, by the old president of the United States, President Obama. He put that list of seven countries together and described them as the most dangerous countries as far as exportation of terror. If terror is going to be exported, it is likely going to come from those places because terror groups there have indeed pledged and promised to infiltrate refugees and immigrant groups to come to the United States so that they can commit their acts of terror here. Now, that was literally a direct statement made by the President of the United States and his team back when President Obama was still in charge. Okay? Those terror groups who are committing acts of terror all across the West, as far as Western Europe, and many of whom have inspired the terror acts that we have seen here in the United States, they have pledged to infiltrate refugee hordes that are coming to the United States. So what the current president of the United States did is said, you know what? The last president was right. Those seven countries are the most dangerous. We don't know exactly how we're going to deal with this. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to institute a 90-day pause on travel from those countries here. Not an outright ban. This is not forever. It's not in perpetuity. It's a 90-day ban, or a 90-day pause, I should say. For 90 days, we'll figure out the best way to vet people and so that we know that the people who are coming here from those countries are innocent refugees looking for help and not people who are coming here to harm American citizens. It is an absolutely reasonable approach, the same type of approach that was taken 6 years ago by the now former President Barack Obama. So, Stan Van, just so you know, that's how it makes this country safer. But please, continue, sir.
There's some idiotic stuff going on, and that's the height of it. But, let's just propagate fear and prejudice and bigotry and, move ahead.
Except for the fact that no fear and bigotry and prejudice is being propagated here by the administration. The fear and the prejudice and the bigotry here is being propagated by the national media that apparently you watch far too closely, Stan. Far too closely. Because what we're hearing is the refugees over there are going to die now because they can't come here to the United States immediately. They have to wait 90 days. They're going to die. And it's going to be blood on the hands of the United States. And the Statue of Liberty has a tear crying down her cheek now. This is terrible. It's un-American. It's mean-spirited. When the fact of the matter is, refugees coming to the United States from those countries has already been delayed by a number of years because of the entire country's acceptance, including the former president of the United States, Barack Obama, acceptance of the reality that there is a lot of danger in those countries and that there are a lot of people who are coming here with the intent of harming us and not being a part of us. So the idea that somebody's going to die, oh my gosh, because of this 90-day ban is an absolute break from reality. That is fear-mongering being perpetrated by the former president's party and by the media, which has something vested in their success. And that's what Stan Van Gundy is now spreading to Pistons fans and anybody else in the world of sports who is interested in this sort of, in the opinions of a head basketball coach about international policy. But one more quick bite here.
She said it wasn't legal, so she couldn't enforce it.
Yeah, right. And it's not legal. And we've had a lot of judges already say that, you know, but you got a guy who's making his own rules as he goes.
And that is another complete and total falsehood. She didn't even say it. See, the reporters are leading Stan Van Gundy, and I'd like to know who these hacks are. The sports reporters, they're standing there talking to a basketball coach, are leading Stan Van Gundy down a road of misinformation, just hoping to get juicy quotes for their newspapers and for their radio stations. I don't know who those hacks are, but they know much about politics and constitutionalism, honestly, as I believe, Stan Van Gundy knows about nuclear physics, which is to say nothing at all, because she did not say it was illegal, which is exactly why she got fired. Had she made an argument that this is unenforceable in a court of law, which is why we cannot defend it, she wouldn't be not doing her job. But her argument was, I think it's unwise and unjust, not unconstitutional. It is not her purview to decide constitutionality, nor is it Stan Van Gundy. So Stan, do us all a favor, and to the reporter hacks up in Detroit who are trying to lead Stan Van Gundy down this road to embarrass himself and then them by writing their ridiculous left-leaning stories in their sports pages, which is not where these stories belong. Do us a favor. Ask him about the rotation. Ask him about his players. Ask him about Reggie. Ask him about whatever you want to ask him, but stay away from the politics. And then I don't have to take the last 15 minutes of my sports show and educate all of you morons in Detroit sports media leading a left-leaning coach down a path to embarrassment and misinformation. And with that, I bid you good day. Mike Miller and Drive Time are next.